It didn't to me that you didn't, and I want to thank you for not running down the anchor chain when EDNS started hurting you. We need a lot more companies to show the same stick-to-itiveness as you are showing in order that we can get this thing to 90% where we marginalize the people who don't do it. Right now, the people who don't do it have an axe to grind. I want to take that away, and so thank you for your persistence in the matter.
Thank you. I guess my only comment there is the real key is executive backing, right? I mean, if we're losing payment and I don't have an executive behind me going, yeah, tough, you know, we know we're doing DNSSEC. We know this is helping us find them in smaller chunks. If I didn't have the executive sponsorship, I would have been, you know, back down the anchor chain. But we do have executives who say, we're going to sign all email. We are going to do DNSSEC. If you want to do business with us, that's the way it's going to have to be. And so, you know, I get backing. I am by my very nature, a very, I'm not particularly conflict averse. So it helps that, you know, I can also go, yeah, no, we're not going to do that. But without the backing, we would be screwed.
I was a bit way back in the corner, so I won't, I decided to walk up here. Michael Sinatra, Energy Science Network, formerly UC Berkeley. When I signed Berkeley EDU a little over a year ago, I used two algorithms, mainly because I was being sort of sadistic and masochistic, I think. And that created certain queries where you could get over 4,000 bytes in response from the authoritative name servers. We had very few problems. One thing it will do is it will very much let you know where all of your unpatched QMail servers are out there, that where people are trying to send you mail. But beyond that, because they'll do any queries, and that was the one that was 4,100 bytes, so it didn't even fit in most EDNS zero buffers. There are some tricks, and there are some ways of minimizing responses, even with DNSSEC, that we can talk about offline if you'd like to, and some interesting things we learned. So obviously we're not as big as you, and we're not as big as Amazon or anyone like that, but there are some interesting experiences.
I'm Peter Loscher, ISE. Hi. We've never met until now, so other than email. So Paul was saying when PayPal became a customer of ours and we went live, there was much cheering and so forth. Well, I, as a sysadmin, was having cold sweats. But in regards to what had happened, from a technical aspect, what we were doing is once a month we were regenerating ZSKs, and so obviously we were going through every 2 weeks we were publishing side by side our ZSKs with the associated RRSIGs, thus the response size bloat. We're currently considering going to what a lot of people are now doing, where it's a case of we publish the ZSKs side by side for a certain period of time and then just regenerate all the RR6 at once. So try to minimize the amount of bloat in the response sizes for, say, the intermediate period. Obviously, there are other things we are also considering about the amount of time we use a certain ZSK, because we had written a lot of this infrastructure several years ago when we were still trying to figure out how long to keep a KSK, how long to keep a ZSK. So we're trying to minimize the load as we start getting into more production environments, trying to realize that, trying to put some realism into our procedures and so forth. So once again, thanks to PayPal for sticking with us. I was woken up too. So
anyone else? All right, I yield.
Thank you. My name is Roy Arends. I work for Nominet, which is a TLD registry. I understand that when you had about 1,100 domain names and 50 of them actually worked. The other about 1,000 or so were basically lame delegations. Is that correct?
No. So for the other 1,000, we generally had, they delegated to our servers and we had SOA, but we didn't have anything that was of any value, right? Some of them I didn't even have MXs in. So, you know, they had SOA, but they had no, they had no internet value other than that.
Okay. Because what I understand is why this stuff has not been, cannot be cached, is because there are no records there. And if you fix this problem using SNS from ISC, you only fix half of the problem. This is not a comment on SNS from ISC. This is a comment of trying to fix this stuff, because we, as a top-level domain, will still see the bulk of those queries because you only fixed your problem. Right? Resolvers will still try to get to that information. They're just not going to your machines anymore. They're going to ISC's machines. But before they actually end up there, they come to us first.
Right. So actually what we do, right, since Mark Monitor is our registrar, and I think they would have to work with people like you, is at Mark Monitor we put the records in place that have a single A record that points to servers they have doing HTTP redirects, and that's all we care about. So we do try to stop on the front end. We don't just say, oh, we're going to put it up at ISC. We actually try to make sure that every record is there. Now, the point I made earlier is what I can't tell is if somebody on some registrar that doesn't do strict name server checking to make sure the records exist there before, you're absolutely right. I'm never going to see that I have a problem because it may or may not ever make it to my servers.
Gotcha. But this is exactly the reason why some registries out there are checking for proper delegation and proper propagation of the zone to secondaries of subdomains, basically, or third-level delegations. We don't do that because for us it just doesn't scale. I understand others do that because they have a somewhat different rule set. You can, of course, check once, but 5 minutes after you've checked, these records might have changed. So I don't think, in general, you should, as a registry, right, should, well, it's up to the registry, basically, what they should or should not do. But we can't, as a registry, fix all of our registrars' or registrants' problems. The only reason I stand up here and comment is, and I love your presentation, by the way, I think it was very funny, but the only part that I have a problem with is that you fix this problem only on one side and then didn't fix the real problem, which is the lame delegation part.
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to suggestions on how we ought to do that. I mean, there are a couple pieces that I think about there. When you start talking about the registry validation, I see some of that. Some of it is, especially for the ccTLDs, some of them have competing requirements. Like, I think .NL has to have only 3 name servers listed, whereas others want no more than 2. So if I have one domain that needs to go multiple places, I can't use the same infrastructure everywhere, and I want to stamp stuff out, right? My goal is not to spend all my time doing DNS administration. It's to try to process payments and keep the site up. But so when I see those competing things, you're right. And there are a lot of times where we get that. You're like, well, you know, you have missed some arcane little bit. I really don't care. I know my stuff is accurate. But you're right. Validation, I think, is, you know, probably of limited value. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, John. John? All right, moving on. Next up, we have Bart Geisen.
So I guess everybody could hear me right loud. Welcome. Good afternoon. I think we slid into the afternoon session already. I'll be presenting to you regarding our research on DNS, DNSSEC client analysis. My name is Bart Gijssen. I work for TNO. TNO is a research institute in the Netherlands. And the work that I'm presenting, we did together with SEDN, the registry for .nl. And we got some assistance from our colleagues at the Laboratory for Quality of Software in Eindhoven. And we used some tooling from NLNet. So it's not really only us being doing this kind of research. Before I start, I think the research that we did so far has been pretty self-contained, but the reason that I'm presenting it here is that I'd really like to have some feedback, and if you have any experience on client analysis, DNS or DNSSEC client analysis, I'd be really interested in hearing that from you. We are really open. We are actually at a junction point where we are going to head our arrows to some direction. And we'd really like to have your feedback on what the most beneficial direction would be. Just to give you a brief, say, background on why are we looking at clients? I mean, the bulk of the DNS traffic analysis that's been done so far is, I guess, on the authoritative side, on the resolver side. But as mentioned by one of the speakers earlier, it's very hard to look at what's behind this resolver. What are these clients actually doing? And that was one of our particular reasons to dive into the client behavior a bit more. What you see here is a pictogram with several kinds of literature. It's not an extensive list, but it also shows that most of the traffic analysis has been done on the right-hand side of the picture. So the key question that we posed ourselves for is how will DNSSEC change the behavior of DNS client querying? And in particular, as mentioned also by the previous speaker, what are, for example, response sizes larger than 512 bytes going to do? What if validation errors happen and the resolver starts sending serfs back to the clients? How do these clients, and I'm not now talking about your laptops and PCs, how are they going to react to that? The basic outline of my presentation is that we did some experiments with DNS clients, and I'll then skip to telling you something about the impact of that, and I'll wrap up with a summary and next steps. So what experiments did we do? Here's on the left-hand side is a experimental setup that we used. We used several clients, placed a DNS resolver in between. Actually, we had a bind 9 resolver in between, and then we had a controlled DNS server. So this was a fully contained, not internet hooked up experimental setup. For the client side, we used several operating systems such as Windows XP, Windows 7, Ubuntu Linux, and Mac OS X. And we used several browsers on top of those. We didn't really do all the combinations of browsers and operating systems. We did quite a bunch. Unless stated differently, we left the settings as much as possible on the default. So we simply downloaded all these versions and then started experimenting with those default settings. Then what we did was we defined the authoritative side, and as I mentioned, we had a controlled DNS server there. Actually, we used the LDNS tool from NLNet Labs, and we configured a domain name which would give us a serverless response, which would give us a valid response. So we had one DNS domain name for each type of response that we'd like to check. Okay? So then we could query for that specific domain name and see what the reaction of the client would be in case of a valid response, in case of a valid response with a size larger than 512 bytes, in case of a non-existing domain, whatever. And we did that by using ping,
in order to see what the operating system behavior is, and we did that via a browser. And the browser, of course, gives us the characteristics for the browser itself and the operating system underneath. So if you do a lot of runs with that, and you're looking at what is the client behavior in terms of the query rates and the query delays, then you get screenshots such as these. I'm afraid it's a bit poor readable, but I'll explain it to you. It's a TCP dump for one of the examples. Here you see a TCP dump for a Linux Ubuntu with a Firefox browser on top of that. And we directed a query towards the domain name or the IP address that will send back a surfil response. So you request for the quad A record, and the Linux gets back a surfil, and what it does is it does three immediate retries for the quad A record and gets back the same surfil response simply because we configured it like that. What's not very strange in this kind of behavior is that it retries. But why does it retry three times, and why does it retry immediate? Okay. Then, after not getting any response, or actually it's the default behavior, it then queries for the A record, and we see exactly the same behavior. It receives the surfil, and then there follow three immediate retries for the A record. Then it decides, okay, I cannot get a valid response here, so I send it back to my browser, and Firefox requests the operating system to do all of that once again just to verify. So you end up with 16 queries in 0.14 seconds. Well, if you do that for different types of response types, you get tables like this. The TCP dump version that I've shown you previously is in the top table on the third row, where you see the surfils and Firefox making the repeats a factor of two, right? The Linux operating system can be attributed to doing four retries, so 2 × 4 = 8 queries in total. If you do that for other kinds of responses, for example, a non-existent domain, with a Linux system and Firefox, you would get a 4 times repeated query. Keep in mind that we configured the authoritative side and the client to only go to one primary DNS server. We disabled going to a secondary DNS server. If you do that, you get a doubling of this once more. More or less the same behavior we see on the Mac OS X operating system, whereas the default Safari browser on top of that does have some different behavior than the Firefox on the Linux machine. In total, you see these kind of repeated behavior from clients like Linux and Mac OS X. As I just mentioned, we configured this to go through a single authoritative name server, so only a primary. It will be doubled if you go to a primary and a secondary. And this table that I've shown you here is only for getting a single record, so a record or a quad A record. If you do it for A record and quad A record, you have to double it again. Then we were quite interested in how are our good old Windows systems going to behave, you know, this kind of experiment setups. And we were, slightly surprised by the outcome. In fact, first of all, if you run an Internet Explorer, but also other types of browsers on top of Windows, we don't see the doubling. There seem to be different versions of Firefox, for example, for Windows than there are on the Linux systems. And in particular also, in case of a surfil, we don't see any repeats. It's actually immediately fed back to the browser, and the browser feeds it back to the client. I'm not saying that this is better or worse behavior than the other. It's simply surprising to us that it's quite different, actually. But keeping this in mind, having those immediate responses, we were triggered on where that would go. And actually, with the Windows systems, we've observed that for it doesn't really matter what kind of browser is on top of the Windows system. It doesn't do any amplification of the querying and response, irregard of the type of response. Not really investigated in our research, but we've observed several other types of sources for more or less aggressive DNS behavior, such as greedy apps, the Bonjour protocol, Facebook apps, which are doing a lot of synchronization, which generate a lot of DNS queries, and also features such as prefetching, of course, introduce a lot of DNS traffic from the client side. It's interesting to compare the impact of this kind of aggressive behavior to the standard behavior of the clients, for example, in case of the surveils and in case of non-existing domains. But once again, we didn't really dive into these features too much. Having said so, of course, the client behavior can be, to some extent, be shielded by the DNS resolver in between. And indeed, if we look in our experiments, we included a DNS resolver, a bind DNS resolver in between, and we see some damping of this more aggressive client behavior by the resolver. For example, in case of no replies, where you ultimately end up with a timeout, in that case, the resolver will retry 7 times with exponential timer backups towards the authoritative side while holding back all of the retries that the client does. Similarly, of course, the resolver, if configured correctly, will cache positive and negatively, so it will cache the valid responses and the non-existing domains. And also the truncation, it will help you there to make this client behavior a bit less aggressive. On the other hand, it also does some amplification. And in particular, if you look at the surveil responses, it does a double check. So there's another factor of 2 in some cases where you would get back your surveils. What we also looked at is how does it handle invalidatable responses. And what it actually does is it returns an invalidatable response as a serval, which is more or less correct behavior, but it makes sure that the client will trigger on this. And in particular, this Linux and Mac OS X, they will really start to react with their immediate responses to this serval. And we see a lot of validation errors being generated, actually. So it does contribute to some of the issues and some of the larger volumes of surveils that's been reported by earlier presenters. So then we try to figure out, where is this? Can we get a solution for this? Can we do we need a solution for this? Is another question. And we asked our friends from the Laboratory for Quality of Software to do a code analysis. And I think this is more or less the same type of code analysis that's been presented by Patricia, I think, based on a static code analysis and a dynamic code analysis. Given the fact that we observed a particular aggressive behavior in the Linux Ubuntu version and in the Mac OS X, our first ideas were, okay, it should be in the glibc somewhere. It's the system library that does the DNS querying. So we requested them, could you do a code scan of the glibc? And their observation is, well, first of all, the system library as a whole looks pretty good, actually. There are no extraordinary characteristics found in the library as a whole. But they were able to pinpoint the code part, which is responsible for this, for this replication in case of, for example, surveils and non-existing domains. And they tried to figure out could you come up with an alternative to make sure that this behavior is cancelled? But they found out that the code part in particular that's responsible for this replication is rather complex. So we said, okay, let's not make our life too difficult. There are experts in this field which would know much better than us how to make any improvement or just any change to this part of the code. So let's leave it at that, and let's first start to look at what's the impact of this. I mean, it's we didn't really address that question at this point in time. So that's where we started to come up with a quantitative impact model, just to try to get some figure on how much traffic is this behavior generating extra. And we started off with some model that is really doing something like perfect behavior. And then our idea was we are going to put this characteristics, this client behavior in this model, and compare the DNS volumes that there would be between the nicer or less aggressive behavior of the Windows systems comparative to the Linux and operating and the Mac operating systems. And then we, in this model, we also took into account, of course, that the bulk of the traffic will not be generated by Mac OS X, but my grandma uses Windows, right? So we took these weighting parameters into account in this model. I'll not be discussing this model in detail, but I'll just show you some results. Here's the first thing that we found out. Same picture again, with on the left-hand side the client side, and in between the resolver, and on the right-hand side the authoritative side. And there's these red percentages. What they represent is the following. We started off with the base case, where we have the perfect behavior of volumes with the normal weights between Windows systems, Linux, and Mac OS X. And then we said, okay, let's suppose that we are able to find the cause of this aggressive behavior and neutralize it. So let's suppose that all world would consist of, say, the Windows kind of behavior systems. How much less traffic would that end up with on each of the regions here in the DNS system as a whole? And then what you see is that that kind of improvement doesn't really bring you too much. It's only in the area of a few percent of less DNS traffic. And why is that? Of course, I think it's quite logical. First of all, the more aggressive behavior in the Linux and Mac OS X, they simply have a relatively low share of the DNS clients. And secondly, this aggressive behavior only occurs in case of, say, exceptional responses. Surf fields, non-existing domains in the lower parts of the authoritative side are the minority of the response types. Nevertheless, you see some difference here. And in general, so on average, the behavior is not really devastating. There are particular cases where it's becoming a bit more interesting. For example, suppose that there's some secondary level domain owner which is making some errors in their DNSSEC configuration, which may lead to validation errors in the resolver, and then you get the Linux and Mac clients kicking in and displaying their aggressive behavior. Now, suppose that I think we run this scenario with suppose that 10% of the DNS queries would ultimately end up with a validation error, then you get these kind of numbers. And of course, this will blow up according to this input parameter, where you say, okay, if none of the responses for a second level domain would be validatable, you'd blow this system up as a whole. So this just shows you that in particular cases, this aggressive behavior will contribute to making it more aggressive. You'll see disproportionately much surf fills in your domain if you're making errors in your validation. Okay? So that's about what I'd like to tell you, and once again, I'd be very open to any contributions and experience that you've been having on DNS client behavior. As far as we've been seeing that the Linux and Mac clients display more aggressive DNS behavior than we see on the Windows systems, which is partly damped by the resolver, but also partly amplified. The impact on the average DNS traffic is relatively low, but keep in mind that it's only it's fractional, right? It's yet another few percent of traffic that you wouldn't like to have. And in particular, for some bad cases, this kind of behavior will not help you. It will really make your problem worse. The next steps that we are planning is to share our experiences with other experts. We are very open to that. In particular, we're also looking at can we have any kind of contribution to improving glibc? And then do some further analysis of quantitative scenarios. We're currently using data from Surfnet, one of the smaller ISPs in the Netherlands, to verify this kind of aggressive behavior. And indeed, in the logs, we do see those immediate retries. And if you fingerprint what kind of clients they would come from, it does seem to be like the Linux clients, which are really being seen in the traffic of this ISP. We're also working together with SEDN to see whether we see this kind of behavior all the way up to the authoritative side. And the question that's been nagging us so far is this aggressive behavior, the impact is relatively low. But what if mobile internet really blows off further than this, and we have a market share there of Linux-based systems, which is way larger than we have currently in our PC market? Where would that take us? So that's about it. Any questions here?
Hi, George again. Sorry. You're familiar with the Happy Eyeballs draft, aren't you?
Yes.
Because some of the behavior that is deployed in existing code are attempts at various things that go in front of Happy Eyeballs to do threaded DNS races to see which query comes back first to make a decision what to do. If you can characterize that behavior, that would be enormously useful. Very, very interesting.
True. A quick response to that. It's a good observation. There's several kinds of additional factors that will make further amplifications, right? And that's indeed one of the things that in our quantitative modeling we'd like to have some idea about. What does this effect have relative to the behavior that we've seen? But also there's domain name completion. There's all kinds of other stuff. And what we're trying to do with this quantitative scenarios is try to quantify how bad is one behavior relative to the others, such that we can really focus on the most important issues that there are that are causing all kinds of aggressive behavior. Thank you.
Russ Mundy, Sparta, Cobb. We've done a bunch of work in instrumenting applications with DNSSEC validation over the last number of years, Firefox being the most obvious one. And, oh, my good news is it's now running on Windows. Yay, that's been very, very hard to get done. But over the period of time, probably the last 4 or 5 years that we've been doing this work, and porting the validation capability into the web browsers, we have observed, not studied or don't have any real numbers on it, but we have observed a very significant increase in techniques being used by browsers for, as George described it, you know, it's the happy eyeball idea of doing everything they possibly can do to get as fast DNS resolution in front of the user as they can. And the results of that that we've seen in terms of our fully validating browser is the more stuff that shows up on pages. And when you look at the last thing I think we did as far as collected the number of queries and responses to fill up a browser with CNN homepage, just as a commonly well-used starting point, it was something over 100 queries and responses to start up cold for one page. And so my point is, it's only going to get worse. Now, what the actual analysis of that and the real-world impact is, I don't believe anybody really knows yet, but studies of this nature are incredibly useful in trying to help people get some insight forward. One thing that we've been able to see in our browser work is that with the separation of the recursion and validation on some, the validation done on the client, and we've just started to look at the impact of doing recursion on a recursive server on a separate machine. We think there may be some very good gains that can be done there that'll let the end user still do validation but not have the heavy recursion load.
Right. Thanks.
Thanks. I'm Paul Wouters from Excellence Corporation. I'm also one of the Fedora developers with respect to DNS packages. For Fedora, we're looking at actually installing a resolver on every client per default, but there are some technical issues that prevent us from doing this right now. One of it is that people would prefer to use the bind name server because they know it best, and bind cannot take a dynamically new forwarder, so if you change your network from one DHCP network to another, you would like to dynamically be able to change the forwarder so you can at least use the caching infrastructure of your network and not become like your own root resolver and adding even more queries to the network instead of reducing them. So that's one of the things we're looking at, and I would actually like to talk to some of the IEC people to see if we can do something. Unbound does support it, but people are reluctant to switch.
Right. I think to add to this, the behavior that we've seen on the bind version that we used, and I guess there will be features to configure that cancel this behavior more. But the standard behavior in, for example, the unbound resolver of if you have a validation error, then keep that in mind for 60 seconds and don't send any of the new queries from the clients to the authoritative side is going to be very effective to as a problem to resolve validation errors. And I guess that kind of technology should be used a bit more.
Hi, my name is Roy Arends of Nominet. First off, I think this is fantastic work. This is really what I like to see in DNS OARC, CCNSO Tech Day. I think this is fantastic work. We at Nominet, we only have the ability to look at traffic from a resolver towards our authoritative name server set. And you guys have done this even without source data. You've created this in your own lab environment. Two questions on this. Is there a paper associated with this work? And if so, can we get a URL to get it?
It'll be due soon.
Okay,
perfect. Sorry, it's not out yet.
No, that's fine. I'm looking forward to seeing it. You mentioned other platforms, like mobile platforms. I'm particularly interested in iOS, the Mac, yeah. and of course the Android behavior as well.
Right.
Is there any further research planned on this? Are you guys willing to work on this?
Yeah, it's exactly the bottom line. During doing this research together with, for example, Antoine here from SADN, we identify that this may be more interesting from the mobile platforms. So far, the research has been contained to the more like laptop operating systems. But we're really eager to expanding this to the mobile platform. We did have one chat with a larger ISP in the Netherlands, which provided us with some data in particular regarding mobile traffic, and they said so far we don't really see this problem yet because they shield a lot of it. And but that of course is not, they have no idea where it's coming from, they have no idea whether Android systems, for example, are really that Linux based that we see the same kind of behavior. But yes, we would really like to dive into that. And once again, I'd like to invite any other experts here to contribute to research like that.
Thank you very much. All right, and next up and last up before our lunchtime break, we have Olafur from Shinkiro, and we'll get him up and going.
As I'm the only one that is standing between you and your lunch, I'm going to try to be quick and entertaining. Okay, so if you go to the first slide is, what do we know about DNS resolvers? In this context, I'm talking about recursive resolvers. Go back to the slide before, please. There are certain questions that I would like to, wanted to be able to answer. And if you ask somebody about it, yes, some of these are economical, some of these are technical, and some of these are standards compliance. I care about standards because I happen to be chair of the DNS extensions working group. I worked on DNS implementations for a long time, and I do research and consulting in DNS. So here are some of the questions. Next slide, please. And I'm going to start by showing you a few test cases that I have seen over the time. Then I'm going to talk about a little bit about them and then bring everything together at the end. So this is something that happened about a year and a half ago. I'm not going to name any names, but this is what happened. The vendor contacted me and said, do you know how Resolver X behaves when it comes to sending queries around? I didn't know. I was thinking about it. Because the vendor had got a call from the operator and saying, you're overcharging us. And when they said, no, we're not, then it was you're stealing traffic. No. But so the final question was the model they used was wrong? Well, what was the model based on? Next one. I've been doing research on what will make transfers of domain, DNS domain from one operator to another operator not work or fail. And as looking at the fundamentals of it, there is one thing that sticks out like a sore thumb. There are two NS sets. One of them comes from the parent, one comes from the child. According to the specifications, the parent is authoritative for the existence of the NS set. The child is authoritative for the contents of the NS set. This was negotiated, this wording with me and Paul Wixie and Paul Markepetris many, many years ago. But the question is, which NS set do resolvers actually use? This dictates where traffic goes, for example, if the NS sets are not the same. And then there is a question of, what if if the resolver is using the NS set from the child and it asks the child server frequently enough, it keeps getting NS sets in the authority section, what happens if it is just refreshing the TTL? Then it may get stuck on the child server. And if the domain is delegated, the old operator does not doesn't turn off service, then people with this kind of a resolver will get stuck on it forever or until they reboot. So next one, please.
Okay, we are talking about various aliasing in the IETF. And one of the questions that came up, what percentage of resolvers support DNA? Well, there are two ways to ask this question. What percent of implementations? What percentage of traffic? Well, we were able to answer partially by looking at what certain implementations do, but we have no idea what is the market share. What is the market share for Nomina, for example? What is the market share for PowerDNS recursion? We don't know. Does it depend? And what about all the other resolvers that are out there? There are lots of little resolvers. Okay, go on. I'm trying to figure out, like my colleague from Japan, how much DNSSEC validation is going out there. I'm looking at traces from a global domain called org. Org is a little bit different from .jp. The DNS key TTL is 15 minutes. The DSS they give out is one day. I've been looking at 15-minute traces. I'm looking for both the DNS key and DS queries, because DS queries are probably a better indicator of whether somebody is doing a validation than a DNS key, because a bunch of key monitoring tools are asking for DNS key queries. And if you ask for a DS, that probably you're guaranteed. So we have to look for to check if somebody is actually doing validation, we have to look at DNS key over time and see how far they're spread apart. Go on. Well, there is a problem. If you look at the NSSET for org, there are six names in there. Afilias, the operator for org, operates 2/3 of the NS records. An outside vendor, Packet Clearinghouse, operates 1/3. Packet Clearinghouse has more sites than Afilias does, and they're more spread out of the world, over the world. We see that about 50% of the, I see about 50% of the traffic in the traces I have, and I can't get the other traces because in some of the places where Packet Clearinghouse has servers, there's no way to get the data back. Okay, so my question, back. Okay, when I wave,
okay.
You okay, simple question. What's the probability of seeing the query that I'm interested in? And then it is, what kind of resolvers am I seeing? And then I started thinking, does it make a difference whether a resolver is busy or whether it is sporadic? Does the resolvers for Comcast behave differently than the resolver I have in my basement? Next one. Similar questions. Whenever I explain to people that there might be child sticky resolvers out there, the answer was always, no, they don't exist. And I said, well, they do. Then they said, prove it. Okay. Then it is, what is the percentage? That's difficult to have. So I decided to design some experiments to see if I could discover what this was. One way was to set up a zone where the parent and child set differed slightly. Doesn't really work unless you have identical probability of questions coming, but we don't know if that's true. So I set up a zone which has only one name server for each one. And in the go to the next slide. And here's the setup in the parent. Slide. We have a parent, and the parent, keep going. It points to one of the name server for the child. Next one. And that gives out an answer called red. And in the NSSET, this one gives out, it points to another name server. And if you go through that one, you get a different slightly answer. And when I'm checking for transfers, then I keep flipping between the blue and reds. This tells me whether the resolvers are picking it up. But how do I test? Next question. So I've thought, we have all of these bunch of these open recursive resolvers out there that people are complaining about. But are they a reasonable sample of resolvers that people use? Well, let's take a look at what they do. So for my experiment, I set it up with the NS record of 17 seconds for TTL, text record for 7 seconds. And at the end of my run, I asked them what their version was, just in hope they would tell it. These low TTLs may be skewing the results. Come to that later. But before you run an experiment, you should know what you're looking for. If I have basically three different types of resolvers that are classified in my model. There is the parent-centric servers, and they always answer from the NS set that is coming from the parent. So you should see a string that is all P's from them. From the child-centric sticky, they go to the parent in the beginning for the first query because they issue the query as soon as they get, and then they learn about the NS set, but they keep the data for a little while. And the parent-centric, I mean the child-centric, it will go yo-yoing back and forth. Okay, next slide. I got lots of different patterns. Here are the top ones. Well, you see the child-centric, which some people believe is the right way to do it, is dominant. Child sticky, ooh, they're 15% of the whole traffic. That was more than I expected. If you go all the way down to, then you see there is the parent-centric show up in ninth place. But if you look at the other patterns, they look like they are some variations of being child-centric, but there are some minor variations. I don't know why I have this long C string here. That should never happen. It should never have happened that way. So, okay, they're close. Go next slide. So, these are some of the statistics. There are 10% that I'm not sure what is happening. But there may be other reasons why this is happening. They may be having different rules about how they handle the TTLs. For example, some implementations have a minimum TTL that they will cast things with. If something comes in with a 30-second TTL, they will still cast it for 60 seconds. There may be answer reuse. I talked to an implementer of a resolver who implements an answer cast, and if he gets a question that's identical, he just changes the fields in the headers and reuses the query. I may be running into Inica servers, so I switched in the middle of the run from one to another. There may be forwarders in front of the servers that I'm talking to, and I'm seeing the behavior of the forwarder, not of the recursive resolver. So there are all kinds of strange configurations that our people are using. Next one. Okay. Does behavior depend on implementations? The most common implementation that I saw from the version string was bind 9.6. Which is good news in a way because it means it's modern. It's a bad thing because it's not the most up-to-date. If you look at bind releases, bind 9.3 and later are all child-centric. According to the source codes I compiled on my machines and tested in my laboratory, 9.2 and older are child-sticky. Okay. But among the bind implementations that say that they are child sticky, only 7 of them say they are 9.2 low. How come? If you look at bind 9.6, which is the most common, there are only 12 out of 62 that behave like the one behaved in my lab. And even after I relax it for slight timings, there are still behavior in there that are not explainable. For example, look at the bottom one. This shouldn't be happening. The good news is there's nobody said they were bind 4. They might be lying. They might be saying they're bind 9.6, but they are something else. Next one. Okay, but here are some concerns. Two very popular implementations of resolvers are parent-centric. Maybe this is because my experiment was over such a short interval and with such a low TTLs that their minimum TTL policies overwrote the behavior that I expected. So I would have to run the experiments with longer TTLs. DNS CAS and OpenDNS are child sticky. Possibly same reason, but maybe not. Actually, in the case of a DNS CAS, I have confirmed it is completely child sticky. So here are some of the other reasons why things may be behaving differently. Next one. Okay, next question. How does a resolver scatter queries? Well, when a resolver is discovering a domain, here's what it's supposed to do. It asks one name server out of the NS set a question. The next question goes to a different one until it's gone through all of them once or multiple times and figured out where the traffic should go. They can do this forever. They can also create what is called an RTT band. They will talk to the name servers that are close to them, i.e. answer with a short. How big this RTT is depends on them. So, we don't know how often they do this, and how often do they forget about all the servers they have and start this learning process again. So, and when we're looking at traces like for JP and New York and others, it is important to know, if you're only looking at a subset, is what is the probability of queries are coming from a busy one versus a sporadic one? And being a busy in one location can be sporadic in another one. For example, I don't expect ISPs in Brazil to be asking a lot of questions in the Czech Republic. Well, I could be wrong, but or the vice versa. And one thing that I've seen from looking at all of these traces is address does not equal resolver. There are lots and lots of cases where there are multiple resolvers behind a NAT. So when you're looking, I was looking, why am I getting a DNS key query basically like a clockwork every 5 minutes from an address? Well, it's a very busy resolver. Oops, no. There are three resolvers behind one address. Okay, so we have to keep that in mind. And how to analyze the data to figure out how many resolvers are sitting behind an address is hard. And if we start seeing more people starting to put resolvers on the end systems, this is going to get even worse. And if we want to talk about DNS validation, we have to be able to, one DNS validator, DNSSEC validator, can label a whole address to be DNSSEC validating, even though it is only sitting on one laptop in one corporate environment, if that's a busy enough laptop. Excellent. So, if I'm looking at the org data, for a sporadic resolver, I have a high probability of seeing the regularly scheduled DNS key query. So looking at a 50-minute sample, I should see it. But for the busy ones, there is no way I'm going to see some of them because they have homed in on sites, like because of where Afelias' name servers are versus where the packet clearinghouse ones are, I'm not going to see it. For example, South America, I'm probably not going to see it at all. Similarly, the other question I would really to be able to start analyzing and is of great interest to me is how will DNSSEC update differ in different regions? So being able to associate DNS query with the region is important, but can we do that with all these strange resolver behaviors people are doing? Next. Okay. So it's not easy to look at traces and figuring out what is going on. What we really, really need is to be able to start thinking about building models that people can reuse to figure out what is going on and do. If I have all these traces from, let's say, .UK, for example, and I only see two of their servers, how do I draw any conclusions? Other thing is, we don't need to see all the queries. We only need to see certain samples. For DNSSEC validation, just looking at DS queries is sufficient, but that does not tell us how many queries are issued by others, and we need to weigh them. And then, of course, resolvers change over time. There is one of the questions that people always ask me is, when they have a problem is, what does bind do? I'm now very happy to answer to them, ask them back, which version of bind? they have changed so much over time. Power DNS has changed its behavior multiple times. I don't know how many times Nominum has changed its behavior. Windows has changed their behavior. For example, last week, Bind 9.8 announced they changed their RTT behavior. Cool! Whether it is for the better or worse, we don't know. Next slide. So, but there are things we can look at. And some of these RTT behaviors were originally designed in a time when we didn't know the world. They were designed before we had Anycast servers all over the world. So maybe that has to be revisited. Thank you. Questions?
Paul Wouters, Excellence. Did you do these tests with both an unsigned and a signed domain to see any difference between whether you would get less less resolvers stuck on the child when they need to validate a DS record?
No, because I have no control over these servers, and such a small set of them claim to support modern DNSSEC. I don't care necessarily in this example about what a DNSSEC capable resolvers do. I wanted to know what do resolvers in general or bigger sample does. So no, I did not look at it, but I could. Or you can run the experiment.
Lunch. Anyways, thanks for coming out this morning, guys. We're going to break until 2 o'clock for lunch, and then we'll get back here and get back at it.
And you're only 5 minutes late.
Yeah, it's not bad.